So before we start the show tonight, I do just have a slightly difficult announcement to make. It appears that the tickets for tonight's recording were overbooked. And the BBC do have some guests that they need to seat. So I'm afraid we are going to have to ask one of you to leave. Now, we have randomly chosen seat C23. So these two gentlemen here will escort you from the premises, if you don't mind. You will be reaccommodated at Gardner's question time. If the rest of you could stop filming, please. Who was in seat C23? Director General of what? I'm Steve Punt. With me are Al Porter, Vicky Stone, Luke Kempner, Pippa Evans, and Rich Pepiat. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you very much, and I would love to say welcome to a carefree bank holiday special, but sadly, we appear to be teetering on the verge of Armageddon at the moment. High on the list of headlines I never wanted to read was this one.
American carrier fleet diverted to North Korea.
It was right up there with British diplomacy in hands of Boris Johnson and Southern Rail franchise awarded to United Airlines. Especially since it came straight after Donald Trump attacked Syria for the first time, opening a rift with Russia, potentially destabilising the region, and worst of all, timing it for straight after we'd recorded last week's show. And a whole section about meeting the Chinese president had to be edited out, because he was actually with the Chinese president when the order was given, and apparently he left the room for 20 minutes, probably halfway through a speech.
China, I love China. We have a lot in common. You have a great wall. I'm building a great wall. You have Chinese food. I love Chinese food. You deny your citizens full access to the internet. My advisors keep trying to deny me access to the internet. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go and do another thing I said I wouldn't do before the election.
And then he remembered he was talking to a Chinese leader and said,
when I get back, I'll explain what an election is.
He went to bomb Syria. Now, North Korea spent the days leading up to the US-China meeting posturing, making threats and firing nuclear missiles into the Sea of Japan, annoying the Japanese who keep finding all their sushi is actually half-cooked. Supposedly, when Trump met Obama during the handover period in December, the outgoing president had warned him,
all of the issues you may face, North Korea will be the most significant.
Now, you can imagine at that point what was going through Donald Trump's head.
So, hold on. Does North Korea?
And my favourite thing about all this was reading that the president of the US's view on the situation was that North Korea was...
looking for trouble.
Which is not just a rather casual way of describing a pariah state's quest for nuclear weapons. It's also a phrase that always reminds me of that song. I mean, it makes me wonder whether if that's what Donald Trump sings in the shower.
If you're looking for trouble, you came to the right place. I will never look scared, cause got Botox in my face. I will take on dictators and stand up for my views as long as I have seen it on Fox News. Melania, where's my special shampoo?
And it's all the more worrying that he sent a bunch of warships off to North Korea just a day or two after attacking Syria, especially since it rapidly emerged that the damage to the target there did seem to be limited. Syrian warplanes were taking off from the base the next day, meaning that Syrian airports are more operational after being hit by dozens of laser-guided missiles than ours are after 2 inches of snow. The runways survived unscathed, apparently, so either only hangars and buildings were targeted or Assad's tarmac contractor should really be brought in to do the M6. It also emerged that the Russians have been warned that the raid was coming, which is strange to think of because it means someone must have actually made that call.
Hello, you are through to Kremlin hotline. Please listen carefully as our options have changed.
To express outrage at human rights violation, press 1. To inquire after missing opposition leader, press 2. To warn of impending missile strike on leading ally, press 3. To inquire why this accent sounds more like compare the meerkat advert than actual Russian, press 4.
Please speak slowly and clearly after the tone, unless you are Boris Johnson, in which case, do not speak at all.
Now, Boris, of course, got a little taste of Britain's post-Brexit status this week when he went to the G7 and was totally ignored. America has reversed its policy overnight on President Assad, but there doesn't seem to be much of a plan for what will happen if he leaves. Hard to believe that governments could fail to plan for what happens in the event of a decision to leave. But presumably, everyone would argue about who should be in charge until Theresa May is the only one left standing there going,
"Ass exit means... ass exit."
But it wasn't just Russia who were warned. In a way, we were all warned it was coming because Trump had always said that he wouldn't attack Syria. There seems to be a rule that everything Trump does can be predicted from what he said he wouldn't do. It's like a new rule of physics. The outcome equals the inverse of the previous tweet times the square of that morning's TV news plus whatever his daughter thinks. And that, of course, was followed half an hour later by a statement from the president's press spokesman, Sean Spicer, who has clearly never heard the phrase, "If you're in a hole, stop digging." He dug himself into a hole this week so deep, there's probably a whole edition of Time Team devoted to it.
Day 3, and our archaeologists are very excited. So, what's down there?
Well, Tony, we've gone through a layer of Victorian rubble, some medieval pottery, through a Roman rubbish dump, gone past an Iron Age grave and the bones of a large dinosaur. And if you look right down to the bottom of the hole, you can see Sean Spicer still digging.
I didn't mean Hitler didn't use chemicals. I mean, he didn't drop them on civilians. Well, he did, but I didn't mean that. And far more people attended his rallies than Churchill's. You can clearly see in the photographs. I'm at the Earth's core.
There is hope, of course. The US Defense Secretary has met his counterpart. The safe airspace arrangement is being restored, and China very much wants a peaceful solution in North Korea. Let's hope it all works out, or this bank holiday might not be as carefree as we'd all like.
Get on down to B&Q for all your DIY needs this Easter. This 5-litre pot of yellow emulsion is only $19.99. Perfect for cheering up the walls of your underground bunker or explaining to your children what the sun used to be. So come on down for our Easter 2017 closing down sale. You can't beat our prices, especially as we'll accept tinned goods, weapons or medical supplies as payment. Spring at B&Q. Thank you, because winter is coming.
Next up is a writer, filmmaker and journalist who has been described by Hugh Grant as hilarious, brave and strangely arousing. We're not going to argue with that, so here to discuss the exciting world of EU farming subsidies, please welcome Rich Pepiat.
When I say EU, you say farming subsidies. EU!
Farming subsidies!
Fair enough. Better reaction than I was expecting. The only way I could generate less excitement is to announce a cameo later from Philip Hammond. That's not a joke, so you go. I'll be honest, I knew nothing about farming subsidies a week ago, as befits a man who grew up in Staines and thought a farmer was anyone growing more than 2 cannabis plants in his parents' loft. And I'm proud to say that I supported those farmers. It's good to buy local. The thing is, along with immigration, how the EU's €145 billion budget is spent was central to the whole Brexit debate. Well, it turns out 40% of the entire EU budget, €58 billion, that is, of taxpayer money, is handed out, €3 billion in this country alone, under a thing called the Common Agricultural Policy, which is partly used to subsidise farmers because the cost of producing some of our food actually exceeds what it costs to buy it. Let that sink in for a moment. What in the world costs more to make than it's worth to buy? It's some sort of riddle. or a question that Eric Monkman would have got wrong on the final of University Challenge and cost me a £50 bet. That's right, Monkman, you owe me. I spoke to Michael Oakes, Dairy Board Chairman of the National Farmers Union, about how much a litre of milk is.
At its worst, about 12 months ago, there was farmers in the UK getting about 14p, as low as 14p, and less on occasions, per litre. The average cost of production is between 28 and 30 pence a litre.
And he went on to say,
the fact that I get a payment from the EU, the retailers factor that, I think, into what they believe they can pay for farm produce, because they know there's a support mechanism in place.
So us taxpayers are basically paying farmers so supermarkets can profit by ripping them off. I mean, that's like making people on benefits work in supermarkets, then paying them nothing because they're on benefits. Which would absolutely never... That already happened. €58 billion a year of taxpayer money on the Common Agricultural Policy. And it gets worse. It turns out the Common Agricultural Policy is largely not about farming. It's about not farming. To regulate the market, the EU now pays farmers not to grow things. Which makes me absolutely furious. I've literally not been growing things my whole life and I've only just found out about this. Kept that one quiet, didn't you, country file? But getting this EU subsidy does mean living on a farm, which obviously has its drawbacks. There's no night bus, there's no 24-hour McDonald's, your only Tinder match is a tethered goat. Except it turns out, you don't actually have to live on a farm to get this free EU money. All you have to do is own the land. The top 100 richest people in Britain get paid nearly £90 million a year just for this. The editor of the Daily Mail, Paul Dacre, might hate Europe so much that he projectile vomits at the sight of a croissant, but that's not enough to make him turn down nearly £500,000 in EU subsidies for his Scottish estate over the past 5 years. If this week I was going to be EU President Donald Tusk, yes, worst episode of Stars in Their Eyes ever, if I was going to be Donald Tusk, I would drive a big fat red bus past the Daily Mail offices with a sign on the side saying, "We send Paul Dacre £2,000 every week. Let's give that money straight to Melania Trump." This is the situation in this country. You can be the boss of a supermarket making a profit because taxpayer subsidies allow you to buy products for less than the cost of producing them. With these profits, you might get a nice bonus and buy a piece of land in the countryside. You can now claim an uncapped amount of even more taxpayer money so long as you promise to do absolutely nothing for it. Meanwhile, one of your laid-off supermarket workers is trying to feed his family of five on a measly, capped £20,000 a year. Now, you're probably thinking, we're leaving the EU, so this craziness is going to be a thing of the past, right?
The government will match the current level of agricultural funding until 2020, providing certainty to our agricultural community, who play a vital role in our country.
I did promise you a cameo from Philip Hammond, didn't I? I keep my promises. Thank you very much.
A comedian, composer and presenter on BBC Radio 3. We've nabbed her across to Radio 4 for the evening. She'll be on 5 Live tomorrow before covering a shift on 6 Music at the weekend. It's Vicky Stone.
As mentioned earlier, social media this week was dominated by the news that United Airlines forcibly removed a passenger who refused to get off an overbooked plane. Despite all the media attention, I think there are, quite frankly, better ways to get kicked off a plane. So if you fancy having a go, all you need to do is to look to celebrities to see how it's done. I've decided to write this song in the style of Sondheim. Keeps it highbrow. You'll see why in a minute. So we start with French actor Gérard Depardieu. This is how he got thrown off a plane, and my word, he did it in style. He took a massive piss in a drinks bottle, yeah, and got most of it on himself and in the aisle. And that's how a celeb traveller got chucked off of a plane. David Hasselhoff from Baywatch, he couldn't board at an early time. He was blind drunk at 7 a.m, but guys, airport rules, that's fine. And that's how a celeb traveller got chucked off of a plane. The first wife of the American president has the vocabulary of a trucker. She got lobbed off her long-haul flight. She called a kid a little. Alec Baldwin refused to turn off his his phone and go along with the rabble. He wouldn't stop playing words with friends. Was it worth it, Alec? I mean, it is a poor man's Scrabble. I think we've all now got the gist. I think we've learned some vital lessons. Switch off your phone, don't get too pissed, or try to board a plane with weapons. Spare a thought for our celebrities. Think of Depardieu with peace running down his knees. Ivana Trump midway through a swearing spree. Or Alec Baldwin stuck with a Q and six E's. But that's how a celeb traveller got chucked off of a plane. My apologies to Mr. Sondheim.
Next, the stand-up comic from Dublin, who has chosen to take advantage of our increasingly weak currency to appear for the first time on The Now Show. Please welcome Al Porter.
It's good to be here. If anybody is wondering, by the way, just so that we're comfortable, because I know you don't know me, if you're going, oh, you know, is he, isn't he? Obviously, I am. I'm from Dublin. Shut your face. What do you think I was going to say? And it is Good Friday in Ireland, and that is why I'm delighted to be here, because I can have a drink. You see, people don't realise in Ireland we still have a blanket ban on alcohol for Good Friday. That's how Catholic... I know they don't do it here in the UK, you know, it's just a European thing. But... No, I'm kidding. I'm not political. I used to think the Good Friday Agreement was why you could drink up north. Like, I am not... The closest I ever got to being political, this is true, was when I was 8 and my nana knitted me a ski mask for winter. But by the time... she was finished, it was just a balaclava. But, you know the way kids love a costume and they won't take it off? Have you ever seen a distraught mother in Tesco or something? And you go, oh, I wonder what's wrong with that woman, and you see that she's being followed by a 3-foot Spider-Man. That was my mother for weeks, being followed by a miniature paramilitary Republican. There's a photograph buried in my attic, okay, of me sitting on Santa's lap in Santa's grotto wearing a balaclava. Put it out for a caption competition in Ireland, and the best one was, what would you like for Christmas? A United Ireland Santa? I am not taking the mick, though, as we say in Ireland. I'm not messing when I say you cannot drink on Good Friday in Ireland. And we go to great lengths to get a drink. People take the ferry. People book onto a train because you're allowed to drink on the train. But there are train strikes now, so it's just carriages of alcoholics for hours. Why do you think I'm doing this show? I get on the plane. I hate planes as well. People always think I'm the air steward. Well, I'm not allowed to be camp. When I came out, my parents were like, Al, you need to come in. But genuinely... You're not allowed to get a drink. For years, people would go and give blood on Good Friday in Ireland because after you gave blood, you would get a pint of Guinness. How Irish is that? Oh, they just tinned your blood, tin a little more. You're feeling light on your feet, feel light in your head. Here you go. My dad used to do this. One year he went from clinic to clinic to clinic until he had a full body transfusion. And his blood alcohol level was just Guinness, right? But I think that's the most Irish tribute we could have to Christianity, you know? Jesus could turn water into wine, the priest in Catholicism can turn wine into blood, and we turn blood into Guinness. I think it's a lovely... And I said it to my dad, I said, well, that's unfair, you know, because gays in Ireland aren't allowed to give blood. And he said, ah, yeah, but gays don't drink Guinness. Which isn't the point. Facetious, only as of this year, gay people are allowed to give blood now in Ireland. Only as of this year. Isn't that incredible? Right now, obviously, I can't because I'm afraid of needles. But the thing is, that's how backward Ireland is. And this is my problem. Gay marriage only came in last year. My dad is a working class man's man. He was a flight sergeant in the Air Corps for 30 years. He always said to me, I thought growing up with the lads around here would have hardened you. I said, it did. No, listen. It's awful, but I think my dad, he didn't say he was happy that gay marriage came in, but I think he was happy because for years he told me he wanted to give me away. My mother bought a hat this week because she thinks it's going to happen soon that I'm going to tie the knot, because I was at a gay wedding, you see, a month ago, and I caught the jockstrap. But... but we are very backward. When 2 years ago, Gay Pride was on in Ireland at the same time as the World Cup, and I overheard two men talking to each other, pointing at a rainbow flag, and one of them said, "Here, what country is that?" But what I loved more was the reply, which was, "No, no, Tony, that flag just means it's safe to swim." I'd say Dave Allen is rolling in his grave, because I don't like to play the paddy for you, but it's disappointing how backward we can still be in the 21st century. Do you know that we still have the Angelus that was up in the Dáil, our parliament, this week to try and get rid of the Angelus? It's a minute's prayer before the 6 o'clock news. It's on our national broadcaster. A minute's prayer. Our news starts at 6:01, and I'm convinced it's because our newsroom is copying the work of the BBC. I think that at 6 o'clock, we're watching the BBC. We're going, "Hold on a second, Tony. What's he say about Donald Trump? Hold on. Here, 1 second. What was that about Syria? Hold on. Good evening and welcome to the national news." I do like Easter, though. I like Easter. It's good. When I was a kid, we were quite hard up in my council estate. We never got taken to pantomime. All we had was the passion play. We would just be rows of kids sitting, eating popcorn and Maltesers going, "Give us Barabbas!" And I never auditioned. The other children auditioned because they all wanted Jesus. But I took the same part every year, Judas, because I had one scene. As a little gay kid, it was my favourite. "The one I kiss is the one you're looking for." I love it. My nana always wanted me to be a priest because we're euphemistic in Ireland. And when somebody's gay but you don't want to say, you say what my nana said, which was, "Oh, Alan, he's for the church." It's so lovely to get to do the BBC. It's so nice to be in front of a really generous audience. And let's hope that Ireland continues to on its, you know, trajectory of becoming a much more open place like it has in the last 12 months. I still get dodgy emails. I'm on television in Ireland. I'm kind of a big deal. And I got an email the other day that was awful. It said, "You disgusting puff, full stop. I don't want any more of you or your smut on my television, full stop, space, faggot." And I thought, how strange. I mean, if you hate gay people so much, to sign off as faggot.
With the school holidays in full swing, spare a thought for the more than 50,000 children currently on the waiting list to join the Cubs and Brownies, because apparently there's a shortage of adults prepared to volunteer as leaders and brown owls, and some children are facing long waits before they can join a pack, and this could lead to confusion when recruiting.
Next, what's your name?
Tony, miss.
Oh, so you're here to volunteer as a scoutmaster?
No, I'm still waiting to join the Cubs.
What badges are you interested in?
Car maintenance and divorce.
It used to be suggested that the Scouts felt old-fashioned, but surely not, since they appointed Bear Grylls as Chief Scout and updated the achievement badges to include rabbit skinning, poisoned foot sucking and advanced urine drinking. There are getting on for 500,000 Scouts and Guides in their various forms, and I'm sure many of us served time for a while, 30th Reigate Pack in my case. And to tell us more, please welcome from the 4th South Croydon comedian and friend of the show, Lucy Porter.
Hello.
So tell me about your experiences in the Brownies.
So yes, I was in the 4th South Croydon. I was in the Brownies. I went to Guides briefly, then I discovered Scouting for Boys. which was much more interesting. But yeah, I was in the Brownies and loved it, absolutely loved it. I mean, it was sort of an innocent pursuit. I was a seconder. I never made it to sixer because that cow Marie Boxall got in my way. Not bitter.
Never quite leaves you, does it?
Oh, where is she now, eh? Is she on Radio 4? No, you're not Marie Boxall.
And what about the activities, the badges, the activities
badges.
And stuff like that?
I loved the badges. I got the entertainer badge. I got the hostess badge. The hostess badge is just a picture of a cup of tea. Obviously, wasn't a very ambitious hostess. There weren't any biscuits or anything. I got the jester badge, unsurprisingly. But I can still remember one of the jokes I told for the jester badge, which was, why did the sand blush? Because the seaweed. And I quite look at that woman. She's shocked. Look at that. It was edgy. It was edgy. I was like the Frankie Boyle of the Fourth South Korea. They do different badges now. I did actually have a look. At the badges they do now, they get to do crime prevention and world issues, which seems like a lot of responsibility for children. Given that I'm not even sure the President of the United States can take those on. We did sort of the outdoor activities as well. We used to go camping, but we used to go camping in the local park. And given that that was in Croydon, we never had to actually light a bonfire. We just used to toast our marshmallows over the burning cars.
Do you think, I mean, there appear to be a lot of children still waiting to join, and yet it has this image of being a slightly anachronistic. Do you think it's an old-fashioned thing?
I suppose, well, I mean, definitely when I was in it, it was, you know, you had to swear allegiance to the Queen, you had to go to church. Although, in a way, that wasn't, in the 80s, you had to do that to get a Blockbuster video card. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't so different. But I think now, though, it has moved with the times, because, again, I was looking at the guiding website, and they're quite groovy now. They do a lot of stuff for their LGBT members, they go to the Pride marches. I think they're quite positive sort of feminist role models now. They've even got a Smashing the Patriarchy badge. Which, obviously, if you win that one, you have to get your dad to sew it onto your uniform for you.
Anything that you volunteer to do with children, you're helping out at school, walking bus or anything like that, tends to involve an awful lot of checks, and you have to be CRB checked and health and safety assessments.
Yeah, well, it's not CRB, it's DBS or MFI or something.
Whatever it is.
I don't even know what it is. It's funny, isn't it? Because I think it does put people off, because I think for people of my age, you remember, like, you didn't need any checks to work with children when I was a kid. Like, my mum and dad didn't care who they sent me off with as long as I had a clipboard and a whistle, you know. Off into the woods with him.
Just as can you remember your brownie promise?
Oh my gosh. It was the I remember one that it was, a guide is loyal, a guide is steadfast and true, a guide will protect the United States from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. I think I was also in the US Marines.
Right. Thank you very much, Lucy Porter. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and goodbye. You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt, Al Porter, Vicky Stone, Luke Kempner, Pippa Evans, Rich Pepiat and Lucy Porter. It was written by the cast, with additional material from Ed Amson, Tom Gold, Sarah Campbell, Stuart Laws and Robin Morgan. The producer was Joe Nunnery. It was a BBC Studios production.